Have you tried to plan a dinner party lately? Have you ever tried to ask what your guests like to eat and come up with so many restrictions you didn't know what to serve other than lettuce and water? Some people don't eat meat, others won't eat carbs, some won't eat anything white, others, well, even the water question is complicated. Sparkling, plain, vitamin, flavored, anyone, and don't even get me started on figuring out what kids will or won't eat. Well, along these lines, a story in the Washington Post this week caught our eye. It was about picky eaters, people who won't eat a certain kind of food ever, or won't allow the foods on their plate to touch each other. We'll talk to the reporter who wrote about it, plus a doctor with an idea on what the behavior is all about. And we'd like to talk to you. Are you a picky eater? Or do picky eaters drive you crazy? Give us a call at 800-989-8255 or 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. First, Annie Groer, reporter for The Washington Post. Welcome.
Thank you.
Great to be here. Thank you. And I should say that you're joining us from the Post ISDN studios in Washington. Are you a picky eater?
Oh, my God. I'm the worst person to have done this story. I'm like the human Hoover at the dinner table.
So how did you get interested in this?
Well, it was an idea that was suggested to me, and what it started out as a kind of lighthearted look, but I discovered after only a couple of interviews that this is a very serious problem for the people who actually have it. It's serious enough that they won't eat in restaurants, they won't go to other people's homes for dinner. Even an office potluck is nightmarish for them because there are so many things that they will not eat. They feel like pariahs.
And you actually found some fairly well-known people in the area who have, you know, important positions who
exactly.
are picky eaters. Tell me what some of their issues are.
Well, Billy Shore, for example, who founded the national anti-hunger charity Share Our Strength, Billy is a total vegetable phobe. The only reason that he now eats spinach, although spinach is problematic these days for other reasons, and corn on the cob is because he has dealings with some of the top chefs in America. Some people can't bear the sight of things that look like what they are. They can't bear a fish that's got a head, fins, scales. They won't eat food that is spicy. They won't allow their food, as you say, to touch on a plate. They eat in sequence. They'll eat one thing, then another thing, then another thing. Your idea of serving lettuce or water, forget that. Many people won't touch lettuce. They don't like salads. They don't like things that feel slimy in the mouth, that have seeds, that are certain colors. So their choices are incredibly limited. But what I found after this story ran, the comments that came into the Washington Post and into my own email were divided very strongly into two camps. Get these people to get over themselves, you know.
Yeah, don't you understand there are people starving?
Exactly.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
And the other side were, you know, I've had this problem and thought I was alone, and it is a problem, and thank you for at least recognizing that it exists.
Did you got a pretty significant response?
I did. I mean, this was the third most emailed story out of the Washington Post, the entire paper yesterday.
Well, why do these people think they have these I don't know what to say, issues or around food? Is it something that started in childhood and they just never grew out of it, or is it something that they developed later on? Or
I think for most of them it did start in childhood, and some of them were indulged by their parents. Okay, if you don't want to eat this, you don't eat this. But others were forced to stay at the table, and you're not leaving until you finish your liver, you finish your peas, you finish, you know, fill in the blank. And, you know, there's a school of thought that this is a control issue for the kid trying to manipulate the parent. But most of these people say, absolutely not. I just can't stand the taste, the smell, the texture. One writer today sent me an email suggesting that these people may have hyper taste buds, that they may have more taste buds than the average person, and consequently something that tastes, you know, moderately salty, sweet, or sour to us is so intensified on their palate that they just can't bear it.
Well, let's get more on that from Marsha Pelshat. She's a sensory psychologist at the Monell Chemical Senses Center, and she's joining us from her office in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Dr.
Hi.
Pelshat, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, what do you think about this? Does this pickiness that Annie is describing, is this a phobia? Is this an obsessive compulsive thing? Or what do you make of it?
Well, I think that it has some elements of both. There is a relationship in our research between picky eating and obsessive compulsive disorders. So there people who are very picky also tend to score high on paper and pencil tests of OCD. But there's also a sense in which this is like a phobia. People know that it's not rational to reject these foods or to be afraid of eating them, but they just can't overcome that fear. And in fact, the treatment for this disorder is similar to the treatment for a phobia.
Which is what?
Sort of like a systematic desensitization, gradually getting used to trying new and different things. But it's not easy. It is not easy at all for people to bring themselves, you know, even to try a bite of broccoli.
If you're a picky eater, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-989-8255 or 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And we'd like to hear from you if you are a picky eater or if they drive you crazy. Did the people that you talked to, did it bother them that they had these feelings? Or did they just think, you know what, it's just my personal thing. Leave me alone. You know, I'll just pick out the peas. It's not bothering you.
For the most part, it really did trouble them because it almost paralyzed them in their social interactions. They couldn't go to restaurants. If they're single and they wanted to date, how do you take someone to a restaurant where the only thing you'll eat is French fries and a beer? How do you go to a party? So a lot of them felt very, very isolated socially, and they also started to begin to sort of doubt themselves. What's wrong with me that I can't do this? Some of them did laugh it off and had, you know, their spouses or their friends and family had made accommodations.
Yeah, you know, love me, love my phobia, right?
Well, exactly. And one email said to me, if I don't want my food to touch and I want to eat it in a certain order, leave me alone. You know, what's it to you?
Let's go to Tucson and Renee. Or is it Renee?
Renee. Yes, ma'am.
Tell us your story.
I am what you would call a picky eater, but basically people around me accept it.
What are you picky about?
Even from a child, I remember going to restaurants and walking into the kitchen because I wanted to see how my food was prepared. And the cooks would let me. They showed me how they were doing their food, and I like to eat one item at a time because very complex taste distracts me. I like to have I don't like any condiments on my meat, but there are some dishes that I don't mind having sauces, like a spaghetti sauce or Alfredo sauce. It just depends on the dish. But I've never had a problem with it. People just adjusted to it. I didn't even know it was a complication until today when I heard the radio program.
Okay, well, thank you.
It's amusing that people feel that strongly about it.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for calling. Sure. Let's go to Seattle. Let's go to Amy in Seattle.
Hi.
Hi.
I am a cheese phobic. I refuse to eat cheese. I don't like the smell, the taste, anything.
Have you always been, or did you develop that later on?
Apparently my mom has memories of me sitting in my high chair eating Gouda, but I sure blocked that out if that ever happened.
Why do you think?
I don't know. As I've gotten older, I've noticed that I've become more lactose intolerant with ice cream, but I really have never been into sour cream, butter, yogurt, anything like that either. So,
does it affect your life in any way? Does it affect your social life?
Well, I'm actually in the wine industry, so it makes it kind of difficult, but not really. I kind of eat around it. I try not to make that big of a deal with it, but my family and my friends mostly know. So,
just don't move to Wisconsin.
Okay.
Thank you, Amy. Or did you, Marcia, do you want to talk to Amy?
Well, I just wanted to tell her that most hard cheese has virtually no lactose in it.
Really?
So
I had no idea. Interesting.
Yeah, not processed cheese, obviously. That has milk added back in, but a good hard cheese like a Parmesan would have virtually no lactose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Amy, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Michelle, the thing is that with someone like Amy, there's just sort of one class of food that she doesn't want to eat, and that's cheese. But for a lot of the people whom I spoke with, it's tons and tons of things. I mean, you can count on your hand or hands and feet what they will eat. So it's a very, very limiting thing.
Yeah, that's an important point. I think that the primary defining characteristic of a picky eater is that they eat a very, very restricted range of foods.
What did you think of, Dr. Pelshad, what did you think of the theory that Annie Grower mentioned, which is that perhaps these people sort of have hypersensitive taste? I've noticed that with one of the kids in my family, that she's got a very slender body type, and just can't seem to tolerate strong flavors in the way that, you know, someone else might. And I just seem to go with the body type. A lot of very slender people I know are similarly picky. And I just wonder if there's just some sort of, developmental sort of issue that it's kind of the science's way or biology's way of protecting them from eating something that they couldn't tolerate.
Well,
what do you think?
I think that there's some evidence for that. I think that it may account for some picky eating in some people. And in fact, in our studies, we did find that picky eaters rated sweet solutions as being more sweet and bitter solutions as being more bitter. So there's a little bit of that there. But I think there are probably also many picky eaters for whom that is not true.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Annie, I was reminded my dad could not stand the taste of cabbage, couldn't stand the smell of cabbage, didn't want it cooked. And I asked him once, and you know, this was only a problem because my mother loved cabbage. And in fact, it was the only food she craved through three pregnancies, I'm told.
Oops.
So they had to kind of figure that out, which they did, obviously, because, you know, they worked it out. But and I asked him once why, because she would just take care not to cook cabbage when, you know, he was at home. And he said it was because during the Depression, there were days when that's all the family had to eat. And
well,
when he grew up, he just said, you know what, I'm never eating that again. But I guess that's not what we're talking about. You're not talking about a strong preference rooted in an experience.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was forced as a child to drink carrot juice by my mother. You couldn't pay me to have carrot juice now. I just find the taste vile. I like raw carrots. I can't stand cooked carrots. And that's one of the few things I won't eat.
I thought you said you weren't picky.
Well, cook carrots out of an entire plethora of food? That's pretty limited. I think that's pretty good.
Okay. Okay, let's go to Ashland, Oregon. And Marie?
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I was telling the screener about actually, there are lots of things that I don't like to eat. But one of the strangest things is that I hate stuffing. I loathe it. And for Thanksgiving,
all
that
stuffing?
Kind of thing.
All stuffing, bread, rice, corn, cornbread, all of it?
Well, actually, it's the soggy bread idea that really grosses me out. I mean, the whole idea of soggy bread. Plus, if I had a sandwich on my plate and some gravy ran over on it, I'd have to throw it away. I couldn't eat that. Just can't handle that whole. I don't know. I've got lots of weird issues, though. Like, I don't like chocolate. I don't like pizza. You know, I mean, every once in a while I have it. But
I'm okay with you on the pizza, but the chocolate thing, Marie,
yeah,
I'm sorry,
exactly.
We can't be friends. I'm sorry, we just can't be friends. We can't hang out. I'm sorry.
I don't know, maybe it's just that bready kind of thing.
Does it bother you that you have these food issues? Is it affecting your life in any way, or people just leave you alone?
It's turned me into a really good cook because I cook what I like to eat. Although when I make the stuffing, I never eat the stuffing. I make it, and people rant and rave. And, you know, I have never tasted stuffing in my life. So I don't even know what it's supposed to taste like.
How do you know you don't like it?
Huh?
How do you know you don't like it? You've never tasted it?
Well, the whole idea of it.
Okay.
Soggy bread. I mean, I would eat a rice kind of thing.
Okay.
But
okay.
The soggy bread, eh.
Okay, Marie, thank you so much for calling.
Okay, bye.
And let's go to Brenda and Shawnee, Kansas, very quickly.
Yes, hi. I have a son who has life-threatening food allergies. And so when we go out or dine with friends or anywhere outside our own home, we have to be extremely careful. And a lot of times his needs are perceived as pickiness, and so people are impatient or not careful, but it's really, this is a matter of life and death for us as opposed to just being picky. So that's really, so it adds another layer of complexity to eating out, is that people misperceive it as pickiness.
That's a very important point, Brenda, and thank you for raising it. And Dr. Pelshad, that is something that needs to be considered, that there is much more awareness of food allergies these days, I think, than there has been in the past. And I don't know whether this is true, but it's my understanding that perhaps more people are developing allergies for whatever reason.
My understanding is that particularly the incidence of peanut allergy has doubled in the last 5 years. And they think of it, the theory that I have read is that it has to do with that we're eating a lot more processed foods that contain one of the top 8 allergens. And so people are being exposed more regularly to things that are already highly allergenic,
okay.
Which seems to make good sense to me.
Okay, Brenda, thank you so much for calling. Thanks, and that was an important point.
So
we're down our last couple of seconds. Annie Grower, last word. Doing this article, you know how sometimes when you're exposed to a topic, it kind of makes you think about things in a way you hadn't before? You said you were the human Hoover. You'll eat anything. Did you, when you were working on this, did you kind of think, oh, maybe I don't really like, turkey that well or something? Did it change your attitude about food?
No, it changed my attitude about friends who are picky. I'll be a little more indulgent because I talked to so many people who were tortured by this issue.
Okay.
That I'll stop being so flippant.
Okay, thanks. Annie Grower is a reporter for The Washington Post. She joined us from those Post studios in Washington, D.C. Thank you. And Dr. Melcher Pelshat is a sensory psychologist at the Monell Chemical Senses Center. She joined us from her office in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Thank you for joining us.
Okay.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin in Washington.